So, welcome to Dilemmas with Jess Ellis. Now, this is a bit of a different Dilemmas with Jess Ellis. This is a special, and what I wanted to do a special on was male mental health. In light of recent things that have happened, and lots of things in the media about people speaking out more, and obviously more in men, and the rates of suicide in different men, I thought that I would get in touch with Ed.
You all right?
I'm great.
Good.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for driving down. And are you the founder? You're the actual founder of a campaign and a charity called It's Okay.
It's the It's Okay campaign.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, literally, I started it about 6 months ago due to the fact that I've my own kind of battles with mental health, PTSD and anxiety and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was all just my own kind of selfish therapy. Like, if I could help people, it kind of help me at the same time.
When you were going through your stuff, what kind of help did you get? Did you feel like there was any help out there?
I was quite lucky. I've got very close, like, my parents are very, very good to me, and they...
And is your dad open at talking about his feelings?
He is more, my mum was the one that was kind of, you'll be all right.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, she's amazing, but she's very kind of stone cold.
Okay.
It's okay. I think it's because I'm the same. I don't talk about my feelings because I don't want to upset anyone else. It's my problems, not anyone else's. But it was more my dad that then made me see someone.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, literally pushed me.
Okay. And so who did you go and see? What kind of help did you get?
I went to, it's called the Priory Group. Most people have probably heard of it. It's both drug rehab and mental health clinic. And my parents funded it. Which is very grateful, really.
Yeah.
And I stayed there for 6 weeks getting therapy, doing CBT and stuff like that, which did help.
Did that help?
It gave me the kickstart that I needed. I was in a point where I was very deep in depression and it was, I don't know where to go.
What were the kind of warning signs that you felt within yourself, and what were the kind of warning signs that your dad saw to help you, that he knew that he had to push you to do that?
Well, I think the fact that I was in a very bad place, I think my PTSD, which came later on that we found out, it was from when I served in the military.
And that's really common, isn't it?
And the fact that you're in the military, you're told if you show weakness, then you're weak and then you're going to let people down. So with that mentality, I kind of went into myself and sought solace in drugs. So I became very dependent on cocaine, mainly.
Yeah.
And then when obviously that kind of spiralled, my parents, mainly my dad, kind of intervened. They took the intervention and went, you're coming with us. And they literally just put me in a car, drove me to the Priory.
And would you say that if your parents weren't there, did your friends notice? Because like I always say that, like, I feel lucky that I'm a girl, because, you know, I don't mean to be so stereotypical, but it is a fact that women speak more to each other.
Girls do talk. They say, how are you feeling?
I feel like if I had any kind of problem, I'd speak to my friends. Also, like, my friends would probably go speak to each other and go, oh, do you think she's all right? Like, oh, I'm not sure she is. Or like that, we kind of meet up for, if we meet up for a drink or we go for dinner, we kind of all talk about it.
Yeah.
You talk about...
How are you doing? How are you doing?
Yeah, like, it might be an argument with your boy. It might be not anything so deep and serious, but we can voice our opinions more, I think.
I think men, if we go to the pub, we'll speak to our mates and it's about football or basic monotonous stuff. We don't go into detail. I think it's a very British thing as well. Like, if I was to say to you, how are you? Most people go, I'm all right.
Yeah,
I'm okay. Because it's, I'm okay, leave me alone, don't ask me.
When you came out of that kind of recovery and stuff, what was the support like from your friends then? Or did people treat you differently?
Different friends treated me kind of differently, because I think a lot of people were still worried, like, if I say something, could I trigger something?
Yeah. Because it is an unknown for us.
Yeah.
We're not taught about it in school. We're not taught how to deal with it.
And you're not told, like, not kind of taught how to bring up the subject, but you shouldn't be scared to just ask someone, are you okay?
Because there's been a lot of shame put on it, which we need to get rid of. And that's the reason, like...
I think children were brought up, especially boys. Come on, big boys don't cry. Like, when you fall over, come on, get up. Big boys don't cry.
Yeah, don't be a girl.
Yeah. And it's that, like my friend said earlier today, he said it became prevalent about 10 years ago, and it still is now, to tell someone to man up.
Grow some balls,
yeah,
all that shit.
Yeah, get over it. Now, That's easier said than done, really.
Yeah.
I wish I could just go switch, done. I'm fine now.
Yeah. So when did you go into your rehab?
February 2017.
Okay.
So it's over 2 years now since I went into therapy. It's been a long struggle. I kind of stopped taking drugs. Last year I had a relapse for about a month or so.
And was that with the drugs?
That was with the drugs. It was literally just after my youngest daughter had been born. And I think my mental health got to a point where it wasn't the best, but I was coping. And then new little life comes into the world.
That can be a massive trigger for men, actually, when children are born.
I think it go like the alpha male, the protector, the carer. And I think it just came over, but how am I going to care? I'm struggling to care for myself. How am I going to care for my third daughter? How am I going to cope? And I went kind of downhill. And I had a relapse, and I'll admit it. But for the last year, I've got out of it again. And that's why 6 months after my relapse, I knew where I was wanting to go and where I wanted to be. And I think that's why the campaign came in.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that? What you do and...
I just set it up initially just kind of to be someone, like if someone felt they couldn't talk to anyone else.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people find it easy to talk to strangers.
Yeah, well, also it's really nice to have a neutral person sometimes that doesn't know you, doesn't know the situation.
They're not going
to
judge.
A bit like what we do on Dilemmas, like a few of the responses that we've got from people's dilemmas is like, it was really nice for someone that was outside that doesn't know me, that doesn't know my boyfriend or doesn't know me mom or whatever.
I think there's no bias, no kind of angles to come from. You're just saying it how you see it. And I think that's what we did. I wanted to start with the campaign to say, look, if you need to talk, like my campaign says, it's okay not to be okay. And it is.
Obviously, you had treatment and then you came out. Is it something that you feel like you live with every day and you just manage? Or do you feel like it's something that you always know that might be part within you, but you know, can you feel like a sign? You'd be like, oh, I feel like I'm going somewhere.
Yeah, I think when I first went in, I didn't know what was wrong because I hadn't been diagnosed. I didn't know what was happening. I knew something was wrong, but until you've had a label put on it, you can't deal with it. But it was mainly my PTSD. And the way my therapist did it is she made me write out the event that caused my, that she thought, which pretty much was what's caused my PTSD. Write it all out and read it out loud many, many times. And now I've had those kind of steps. I think with the PTSD, it's not up here anymore. I've said it, so...
Yeah, so it's out there.
Exactly.
Hello, Luke Jurdy.
Hello. I'm sorry I'm late.
No, don't worry.
It took me like 40 minutes to get here from the gym because of traffic.
You joke. What, from David Lloyd?
Yeah, it took me 40 minutes.
So bloody hell.
Yeah. Past five.
So,
good.
This is Luke, and this is Ed.
Yes.
Right. And his campaign is... I don't know, maybe you follow it.
It's okay campaign.
It's okay.
Okay.
I keep saying it's okay not to be okay, but
that's the kind of that's motto.
Yeah, I know, and I just keep, okay not to be okay.
We'll have to find that and just keep playing that on the profile.
So, the reason that I invited Luke round was because I did have this idea about doing something for Mental Health Week, and especially on male mental health, and I just text my best boy mate, someone's just like, how do you feel about talking about your mental health on this as well? So I've just been speaking to Ed a little bit about his experiences and why he started the campaign. Cool. Maybe I'll ask you like some of the questions that I've asked, like, what do you think is the main reason that in our society today that it's harder for men to talk about their feelings?
I wouldn't necessarily say there was a main reason for it. Maybe the type of people that you grow up with.
Who your friends are. And
yeah,
stuff.
Like maybe if your family hasn't been very open, or perhaps you've missed a father figure.
We were talking about this the other day, weren't we? Yeah. When we was watching, it was funny, we were watching SAS.
Yeah, Who Dares Wins.
And obviously it's like a group of guys, and we were just talking about like the some situations that happened within that programme. We were like, maybe that's because they can't speak to someone. And I was saying to you, wasn't I, like, when your friendship group from, because also the difference was that we're actors within the acting world, everyone's quite open, aren't they? And like you can speak a lot.
Yeah.
But then obviously you've got your friends from back home that is a big group of lads from Derby and they're rugby lads. And I was like, do you ever speak to each other about stuff like that? And you were like, not really. Like someone said something about being oh, I felt a little bit anxious, and then the conversation just starts.
Yeah, that's kind of the extent of where it was going, because I was talking about CBD oil. Which I've been taking for about a month or so now, and just to see kind of what it does, because I've heard loads of good things like health benefits and
you love stuff like brain coffee.
Yeah, like so many, and that probably I think, which we'll discuss later, that comes from an anxiety of my own that I've had for quite a long time, to do with my health, and so I kind of hear about, you know, supplements or things that people perhaps haven't heard about as much, and I'm like, oh yeah, I'll try that because that gives me an edge.
No one else knows it,
what's this secret elixir that's gonna help?
But also, like, which could help, but also could be like a great placebo as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and we were kind of talking about, I was talking about that, and then one of the guys was like, oh yeah, well, I get really anxious on a Sunday night for no kind of reason, and I just kind of start worrying about work, and I'm like, well, there's a reason to start with, you know. And he kind of can't put his finger on what it is, and kind of talk, you know, briefly about that, but then it doesn't go beyond the surface. And I think
it's the embarrassment, I think, that comes in, goes, oh, I can't talk about that, I can't.
Yeah, I think
I've given you the kind of lowdown, the small details, that's all you need to know.
Yeah,
I think that comes back to that male, like, that macho image that you've got to portray. You've got to be the protector and the provider. Where I, like, my upbringing, where my dad was, that he worked 20 hours a day, and until I was older, I never saw him cry, never saw him. He was as hard as nails. I was petrified of him in a good way.
But I think even that vocabulary that you just used has to change. Mm. So saying somebody's hard as nails is like, and I know exactly why you've said that, and the whole image of being hard as nails is that
alpha male
tough exterior. Yeah. And really, I think, like, if we could change that lexicon to say hard as nails is actually somebody that is tough and is determined, but also is very sensitive and open and cries and things like that.
I think that makes a stronger person, that you can talk about your feelings.
Yeah. What was it like being in the military and people talking to each other about problems and issues and mental health?
That's quite easy. We didn't. Right. I think the girls did more than the boys, because I think it's just more, I don't know, stereotypical, but women talk to each other a bit more. They'll say, how are you feeling? Us guys didn't do it, because most of the time you're too busy working, and when you're on your off time, you're either at the pub or you're playing sport, and it's kind of...
So if, like, something really terrible happened with a few of you and you were all involved and you all saw something, would you go back and would you ever be like, fucking hell, that was tough, or that was hard, like, I can't stop thinking about that?
It was what happened on tour stays on tour.
Really?
It's a bit like, it goes down to, like, guys going on stag do's, what happens when you're in Amsterdam, stays in Amsterdam, whatever. It was the same thing, we just don't talk about it. It's a bit like on Gavin and Stacey, the fishing trip incident. No one actually knows what happens.
Yeah. No, that's my favourite bit.
But yeah, it's like, it happened. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Don't talk about it. It's
Yeah. So that obviously needs to change.
Yeah, I think, like a lot of, just someone to talk to. Because, like, a lot of guys have seen a lot of bad things. Mm. Like, you see that kind of, the SAS programme. The guys that are on there, that some of the tragic things that have happened... And Ant Middleton does, he brings it out, he makes
That's
them
talk
about
I it. Like that programme so much, because they make them talk about that.
There was a guy
traumas.
On there, his wife committed suicide. Mm. And he was like, "What's there's something up, what aren't you telling us?" And he literally had to...
He
nearly enough had to jump down his throat and drag it out. Mm. But he made him say, he said, "I'd rather you tell about it, because then we know what's up.
And then we can try and put then things in place to help."
He says... I love how blunt he is. He's like, tell us how it is, tell us what's wrong, because then we can fix it.
Mm. Yeah.
I know it's not that straightforward, but at least you've got an idea.
What would you say, Luke, was your biggest struggle with your mental health? Or
I think when I was young, it's about probably 11 or 12 years old, I had a knife put to my back in a local park with this older guy, and it was incredibly traumatic, and kind of we
for a 12-year-old, like,
yeah,
so scary.
It was like
for really, anyone, but yeah.
And then I kind of backed off and he chucked the knife into the grass, and so I knew it was like this pen knife that he'd put to my back, and I ran home, and my mum called the police, and you know, and for years after that, I didn't want to go out, like, yeah. So I had, and I think then when we left that area and moved to Derby, I was constantly putting up this front, and had a lot of anger, like partly to do with that and partly to do with things that happened with my family, and that had a big effect, and nobody sat me down and went, should we talk about this,
yeah,
or my mum never said
you're particularly angry at the situation, yeah, or like you're defensive of the situation, yeah. That's a bit,
yeah, no, nobody said, look, we should get you some counselling, yeah, or you should speak to somebody about this. It just wasn't really spoke about, not from what I remember. I mean, I don't, you know, my mum perhaps did speak to me about it, but I don't remember if she did.
Was it kind of one of those, let's kind of not really talk about it, then it might go away, or you
yeah,
might
maybe.
Get over
or
it.
Or boys will be boys,
yeah.
Kind of,
yeah,
like,
I mean, I don't
get
think
over it, or
yeah, I don't think it was any of those things.
Yeah,
I don't think there was even necessarily a reason. It was perhaps just she didn't think, or didn't think to bring it up, or didn't,
right, yeah,
just didn't even cross her mind. Perhaps I don't think she thought,
wasn't it an intentional
talk
thing?
No. I don't think so. I don't think she thought I should talk to him about this, or actually, no, I'm not going to. I don't know whether there was a definite decision made, and maybe there was. Maybe we did talk about it, but I don't remember talking about it. And I carried a lot of anger in me, and I was always kind of quite mouthy and putting up this shield of like, no one can touch me because I'm big and hard, sort of thing.
Yeah, and like, because you are smaller in height,
yeah,
do you think that was a, because obviously you go to the gym a lot and you bulk yourself up a lot, do you think that was part of a shield, like part of a, like, someone's intimidated me and you can't intimidate me?
Yeah, I think perhaps, but then again, I didn't go and do boxing or martial,
yeah,
arts or,
yeah,
something,
yeah,
like that, so I don't think I perhaps like felt the need to physically defend myself.
Yeah.
But I think I definitely felt I've had a lot of anger in me for various reasons. And I think that was one of the things that triggered it.
Yeah.
And it was never addressed properly. And I only kind of addressed it in the last few years when, you know, a few things have happened where I was like, particularly with alcohol, where I've gone out and said something to somebody, or pushed someone, or got angry at somebody for not a lot,
yeah,
really, and then had to deal with the consequences. And only kind of speaking to somebody a few years ago, we actually properly addressed it. And it's like, you know, it's okay that happened.
Like we were just talking before you came, like talking about the fact that, you know, in America, every single person has a therapist, like having a dentist,
yeah,
it's passed down from your parents, yeah, that we often think of it as like a secret thing, like,
yeah,
it's like a...
It's a taboo, it's still,
yeah,
a taboo, really,
yeah,
to an extent. Like,
yeah,
but the,
oh,
more
you got
people...
a therapist. Oh, oh, don't tell anyone about that.
Yeah. You wouldn't go to the dentist or to the doctors or wherever and go, you'd go, I'm going to the dentist, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I've got a dentist appointment.
But if it was therapy, you'd feel, yeah, like people would be like, oh, no, I'm just like... But I think that obviously, the more that we talk about it, the more that hopefully...
It normalises
it. Will
it
sound the same as someone going, I'm going for a doctor's appointment.
And it's tricky for people to get on that wavelength. I mean, I remember telling my mum about it, that because I went to some counselling, like anger management counselling, and she just didn't react very well at all, and kind of went, oh, I wouldn't like to tell anyone about my life, and that's not supportive.
Yeah, do you think she would almost maybe thought, is that her fault?
Yeah, perhaps.
Do you know what I mean? Like maybe it was like, there is this massive bit of shame.
Really?
Like,
she would, I think, I don't know if it's like mummy's little boy.
Mm.
Like, I'm supposed to be the one to look after him. I'm supposed to be the one that makes sure he was okay. He was mummy's little soldier. And, which he always called me, which doesn't help, because then you just think, soldiers fighting, you got me strong.
Yeah, yeah. There's a vocabulary thing again,
yeah,
there,
exactly,
isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think that social media plays a big part in people's mental health?
Definitely. Like, it can be so amazing, so helpful, so, like, it can promote so many good things.
Yeah, like, if you, like, for people that are listening to this,
yeah,
now, if they're struggling, they can go and click on your page.
Exactly.
They can, but at the same time, but on the way to your page, they could probably see someone living the best life in Dubai with a six-pack and veneers and looking like they're having,
yeah,
the best time ever.
Exactly.
I think I remember watching... this is going to embarrass me now, a bit of TOWIE. But
I'm from Essex. I live that life.
I remember one of the characters on that, I think it was that Tommy Mallet, who's done really, really well actually now out of his train things. But there was an episode, I think it was last season, where he was saying, like, he got broke down and said that he was struggling with his mental health and that his pictures of his Range Rover were on his Instagram, but he was missing the payments. It wasn't his. He was barely paying for it. Yet in every picture, it looked like he was, you know, driving around in the latest Range doing that stuff, but actually he couldn't even afford the payments. Yeah. Like, so I think people need to be
aware that what people only put the best things of their life on social media.
Yeah.
No one ever takes photos of bad things in their life. They only take it when they're on a beach in Spain or whatever.
People are starting to do it a little bit, aren't they? That like Instagram versus reality. But even that in itself gets me a little bit, because it's like...
Their reality is the best of their life.
It's like some really skinny person going, this is Instagram, this is reality. And they're like bending over so hard to get one tiny fold. And I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
You can get stuck down a hole. Like, I can't... I'm 32. So social media wasn't around when I was in secondary school. God, I can't imagine it. Like, I feel like social media doesn't affect me that much because I was already kind of knew who I was when it came out. But to grow up seeing that, that must affect mental health within teenagers.
I think it does. Like, I've got a 12-year-old daughter. My daughter, Layla, she's very, 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 very clever. But she's never more than about 2 feet away from her phone.
Yeah.
And I think it's scary because kids are growing up seeing celebrities living hashtag my best life.
Yeah.
Worst hashtag in the world, because whatever you're seeing on Instagram, divide it by about a million and that's what actually their life is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because everyone only, like I said, no one puts the bad things in their life on social media. They always put the good. And then kids have got all this social media and they're comparing themselves. They go, well, my life's not like that. Because nowadays, especially in America, obviously it's a bigger place, you've got kids that are celebrities at 9, 10, 11 because they're on YouTube channel.
Yeah. It's a whole different world, actually, that I'm not really aware of because I don't have children and I'm not from that age. But I can imagine that is so detrimental to people.
YouTubers are very influential in really good ways. Like, my daughter sees a lot of good stuff. She's got a favourite YouTubers. But then it's detrimental because they see someone the same age on YouTube talking about where they've gone, what things they've got.
Yeah.
They go, but I'm the same age and I haven't got any of that. My life must be awful. And I think that's what has got to be brought into schools. It's not, that's their life.
Yeah.
This isn't your life.
Also, they need to be told that it's like reading a storybook or watching a film or watching a reality TV program. We all need to remember, you know, it's scripted. It's not real, really.
They're putting the best of the best on their social medias and stuff. Like I said before, no one ever puts bad things from their life on social media.
Well, I think there is a caveat to that, because I think social media can be a real force for good. And I think if you looked, I know exactly what you're saying, like the majority of celebrity accounts that people follow are, I'm living my best life, I'm on holiday, I look great, blah, blah, blah. But I'm sure if we looked hard enough, there's a lot of accounts that are, you know, designed to help people with their mental health. And same with YouTubers. Yeah. Like, so I think if that's the medium that children and people growing up are choosing to use, then they should follow their favourite celebs by all means, but also follow helpful accounts, you know, mental
like
health charities.
Account.
Like mine.
Like Ed's account. And no, well, exactly that. It's not all bad. And
of course not.
And we can't sit here and go, no, social media is terrible. But if you spend 8 hours a day on social media, it is terrible.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to spend that long on it, you are going to find a lot of bad stuff.
Yeah.
Because
it just depresses you.
Yeah. And I think, like, that's why with my campaign, we've got celebrities that are now, like, telling other people about my campaign, which then people see on their account, like, their favourite celebrity's account. Oh, well, then, if they're talking about mental health, maybe they've got an issue, they've experienced it.
Yeah, it's a great platform. Yeah. That's why I wanted to do it, because you have, like, it's an accessible thing. And it does make it seem easier and better, doesn't it? If it's coming from someone that you... I mean, it's weird, isn't it? Because these celebrities that you know, whatever, you don't know, but you might really respect them and like they might be your favourite footballer or whatever. And if they're saying stuff, then you're more likely to listen to it or feel comforted by it, which is actually quite weird, because we should be doing that with our friends, really. Mm. But I think it's a really good platform.
I think especially with like YouTube, the YouTube sensation that's flourished, I think a lot of youngsters, they see these YouTubers because they watch their videos day in, day out. A lot of YouTubers, the more popular ones, are bringing ones out once, maybe even twice a day.
Mm.
And then they see that and they're like, they're my friend. They kind of see them as a friend because they know, well, the good bits, but ins and outs of their lives daily.
Yeah, that's mad. My
sister's been struggling with a chronic migraine thing, and it was a condition that she, you know, none of us knew much about, and she found a girl that had, on YouTube, that was talking about that particular illness.
Oh,
and
really?
It really helped her because she watched this video and she sent it to me and said, look, this is how I'm feeling, because she couldn't explain it, and she was like, this girl explains it perfectly. And I watched the video and I was like, oh, okay, God, that's awful what's going on. And there's so many good people out there that are doing things like that girl. And I think there's that balance that if you are feeling down, and the type of medium that you use for culture and entertainment is social media or YouTube, then you should search those people out, because it will really help.
Going on from that, what's happened recently with Mike from Love Island? We all know that tragic situation, that he's obviously felt like things have got on top of him and he has taken his own life. And that was a spur as well for me to... A lot of stuff's going on at the moment, but I just thought, you know what? Like, we do really need to talk about this. This is an epidemic. This is really bad.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm not just seeing that in the celebrity world. I'm seeing that on Facebook. I'm seeing friends of friends go, so sorry that this young guy took his life, or this young woman, or whatever. Do you think that things like, for him, the persona that he, you know, he was basically a soap baddie, wasn't he?
Yeah.
They called him like Muggy Mike. That was his thing.
He was the player.
Do you think that there has to be something done about like saying things like Muggy Mike and trolling? And
I think there should be... I think, first of all, there should be more thorough psychological assessments before people go into programmes like
Definitely.
This. Because it's such a big thing how much people struggle with being thrust into the limelight so quickly. I mean, people on Love Island, they come out of the villa and they're probably amongst the most famous people in
the
UK.
Like, yeah, like
that is really difficult to deal with.
Summer, like,
yeah, that is really difficult.
I think we're talking
about
aftercare. That should be a secondary thing. It should be like pre-care.
Yeah,
they should say, right, you're going to do this. Even if you're out in the first week, you're going to be well known. Mm. You're going to be. You've got to ask, have you got any skeletons in your closet? Like you said in one, your previous podcast, when you went into soap stuff, have you got any skeletons in your closet?
Yeah.
Is there anything that's going to come out that is going to rip your world apart?
To be fair, like, I don't know what the psychological assessment is. So for all we know, it may be like extremely thorough, but it doesn't seem like it from what people have said after they've left the show.
Yeah.
So there's obviously something that needs to be done.
Yeah, there's like a little chink somewhere in there. Like.
And to go back to like, the Muggy Mike name, that's obviously not helped. And I think it was Sam Thompson, the Made in Chelsea guy, that had posted something about Mike, and that he'd said that Mike had thanked him for not calling him Muggy Mike.
Oh, I saw that.
So there was obviously a lot of pain to that. And I'm guessing, you know, if he's on a night out and walking down the street, people are going to go, oh, it's Muggy Mike, it's Muggy Mike, you know. And
we all know how, but like, if you...
But then how do you tackle that? Like, once there's a name, it sticks.
From what, obviously, statements, you have to take every kind of media statement about these kind of things with a pinch of salt, because you have to wonder how much truth is in it. But the fact, when that kind of Montana Brown was talking about the way he was and the type of person, and the death of his nan, so he was a big thing in his life, which I understand that. I choked up massively when I heard about that, because my nan, one of my nans, because both of them died within a 9-month period, but last year my nan died in last February, and she was like my rock, my best mate.
Yeah.
Like, we'd go and get pie and mash and we'd hang out, and she died, and it was like, she was the one person that would give me the proper kick up the backside, call me an idiot.
Yeah.
And she'd gone. And it kind of resonated with me.
That's another thing, isn't it? A big trigger in mental health. Really important people in your life dying.
Leaving you.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I don't know whether it's like an abandonment thing, kind of, well, they've left me. Like, I've got nothing else to live for, especially as someone, he seemed to be a very, very close to his nan.
Yeah.
And then her passed away because, obviously, he'd moved in to care for her.
That was only, that was only reported after something really tragic happened. It wasn't like, oh, here's a nice story about, actually, what's Mike up to now? Well, he's moved in to care for his nan. Like, that would never have come
out,
actually.
The so-called muggy Mike is actually his nan's sole carer who's moved in with her.
Yeah, that would never have... We wouldn't be talking about that today.
Good news doesn't sell
papers. If he hadn't have died. So, I guess, obviously, what's come up a lot when we've been having a chat is that it is really hard for men to talk about their feelings. But also it's come up that I'm a woman and I find it really hard.
Oh, yeah.
I might not look like one today. I find it incredibly hard to talk about my feelings, which is very strange because I have a very open mother. But I have a very close dad. Like, and I think that's what it comes from. I think I've inherited that from him, and I find it very, very hard to speak about my feelings. So I guess what is your main struggle right now? What's the thing that's playing? And I mean, it can be really small. Like,
I think personally, like, I'm in a position where about a month ago lost my job with three children. It's tough because obviously my partner who works is now for the time being sole breadwinner and goes back to the whole men carer provider. There is that embarrassment, but I'm lucky that I've got supportive parents that are helping us pay bills and stuff because we've got children, young children that needs to be paid for, and half of it I don't reckon they want us living back with them. So also, it's probably they want to pay.
Also, it's like what we talked about before as well. I know what it's like, you know, to lose a job, and it's about the routine as well. You just can go crazy without having a routine, like, and you want to be working, you want to be doing stuff.
Yeah. And I think, like, losing a job and then not being able to provide, it's the sense of embarrassment that having to say, my parents pay my bills. I'm nearly 32, my parents pay my bills. It shouldn't be like that. But then the embarrassment of it, that happening, and then struggling, because I've got my mental health issues anyway, it kind of brings it down. So then it's trying to, I thought, overcompensate and trying to do more things, which then keeping my routine to help my mental health, but then that's stopping me job searching.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it's
a
that
catch
constant,
22.
Yeah, kind of constant struggle.
What would you say, Luke, would be like the biggest thing that would be like playing on your mind or affecting you at the moment?
I've struggled with anxiety about my health for a long time.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't kind of get in the way of my life as such.
No, it's not like a huge issue, but it's there.
But it's there. And if there's any little thing that's perhaps off or not quite right, I worry that I think the worst. But I don't think in concrete terms like I'm going to die. It's just this anxiety that comes up. So like, for instance, at the moment, I've been getting like these floating like black dots in my vision. And so I went to the opticians and he was like, that's a really normal thing. You don't need to worry about it. It'll either go away or your brain kind of tells you to ignore them in the end. But then, so some days I'm absolutely fine with that. And then other days I think, oh no, there's quite a few. And I really start to worry about it. And I know that it's irrational, and I know that I'm not going to go blind or I'm not going to do anything like that. But it's there in my head. So it's having to, and I'm still on a journey with that and having to work out how to cope with it.
Yeah, I actually think that those anxieties come with getting older.
Mm.
And also like what we were talking about a bit before, but like when you've got like a really happy life in every other issue and you think, is something going to go, like, is something going to come and spoil that?
Yeah,
because
I
like
it.
My job, I've got a great relationship, I've got this house.
Something's
like,
got to go wrong.
Something's going to go wrong. Like,
it's happened. I mean, it happened like years and years ago. Like, I convinced myself that I had Parkinson's. And like, you know, it's quite a funny story because it was like, I was only like 14 years old.
We have taken the piss out of you before, haven't we?
And I started twitching, and then I thought, because it was in my head, it was making me twitch more.
And,
and my mum's friend who was looking after us at the time took me to hospital because I was panicking so much about it.
Yeah.
And that's it's a real thing. And like, and people have, you know, have taken the piss and like people go, oh, what's wrong now? Hooking hell, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it's a real thing that makes me really anxious.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's, you know, and it can, if something's dominating my thoughts, like maybe I found a tiny lump or something like that.
Yeah.
And I might have had that all my life, but I've only just found it. And it'll dominate my thoughts, like particularly if I'm hungover or something like that, which enhances anxiety anyway. But it's a real thing that people have to go, okay, so what do you think is wrong? Do you think you should book a doctor's appointment? Or I don't think anything's wrong. It's stupid.
Blah, also, blah, blah. I just think that's so helpful because I feel like there'll be so many people listening to this podcast that will go, fuck, I thought that was just me. Like,
Oh
my God, like how many times have we read things, watched things, heard things happened to me so many times and I've gone, oh God, I instantly feel so much better. But I guess that is like mental health, isn't it? Mm. Like we're all carrying around these thoughts that we have.
And we don't talk about death enough either.
No,
and that's a big thing.
Big anxiety.
Yeah, massive. And that's what it ultimately is. When I'm worrying about my health, it's worrying that I'm going to die.
Yeah,
which is the one certain thing in life.
And I think I'm going to live forever. Yeah.
And that's what my counsellor said to me at the time when I brought up the health anxiety. She said, so what are you anxious about? Well, I'm anxious that I'm ill. And she said, okay, so then you go to the doctor. And I said, so then what are you anxious about if you're still ill? And you're like, well, that I'm going to die. And then she said, well, then what would you be worried about if you died? And I was like, yeah, it kind of makes sense in a way.
Yeah.
It's like, well, if I'm dead, yeah, you're right. There's nothing to worry
about. That's
the
end of the chain.
Yeah.
But I think that what's come up is that we have asked lots and lots of questions and we need to know where answers are. And what I think that we should do with this is, I think that we should do a two-parter. Mm. I wanted to release this for Mental Health Week in May, but I think what we'll do is we'll come back because what I'd like to do is for people to hear us talking about this in different situations, but I'd also like people to send in dilemmas. Now, you don't have to put your name, you don't have to put anything. It doesn't have to be in the normal dilemma format, but if people have got questions of, or even I feel like that, how, you know, who can I speak to? Where can I go? Or like you were saying before, you know, I've noticed that my partner, there's a bit of a change in their mood. And how do I approach that? Who can we go to help for as a family? So I think that if people can get in touch with us at the Dilemma Socials on the Twitter, on the Instagram, and then we can have a look at that. We can get you back, Ed.
Yep.
We can get you back, Luke. Mm. And we can talk about them together and we can also point people in the right direction. I think that would be really helpful. Yeah.
And I'm sure Ed's exactly the same as me, but my DMs are open on Twitter, Instagram. Like if you want any kind of like advice or, I mean, I'm not an expert on it, but I'm happy to listen to anybody or
give
whatever
right
help
person.
I am. Yeah, or guide you to the right person or give you like recommend books. Like I have so many books that I could recommend to people to help or podcasts or, you know, anything like that. Then, you know, you can always message me.
That's brilliant.
And I'm sure Ed's the same.
Yeah, definitely. Like obviously our campaign or even my own personal Instagram, Facebook, whatever. If it means helping people, that's the main thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Our handles are @DilemmasJess. Or you can get in contact on mine, which is @JessicaEllisUK. You can go into my DMs. We just really like to know any questions you've got about mental health. And what are your handles, just so that people know?
The It's OK campaign is @itsok_campaign. And then my own personal one is @EdArcher87. Anybody can get in contact.
Yeah,
we can get back to you.
Brilliant.
And I'm @LukeJurdy on Instagram and Twitter. Yes, just send me a message. I'm not sure if my DMs are open on Twitter, but I'll change that.
Yeah, perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming and talking about this. Like, I just think it's really helpful. And thank you so much for being really open and honest. Because actually, I do know how hard it is to talk about things like that and talk about your past. But I do really hope that we can help some people or we can just point people in the right direction. Or like we referenced before, someone can go, oh, I feel like that. Like, I'm not going crazy. Like, I feel anxious about my health or I've had a problem with drugs or I can't talk about my feelings. I feel down because I've lost my job and I've not got a routine. So if we can help any anyone, then I think that that's great. So thank you for giving up your time.
You've been listening to Dilemmas with Jess Ellis, and we hope you've enjoyed this podcast. If you have, you'll make Bob the dog very happy if you could click subscribe, give Dilemmas a rating, and also leave a review on Apple Podcasts too. And of course, if you've got a dilemma, then get in touch via the Dilemmas socials at Dilemmas Jess on Instagram and Twitter. Finally, don't forget, nobody's got their shit together, and you're doing just fine. Thanks for listening.